Coming colleagues, have the a delegation from John. I am Isham Alale, the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on High Education Training. And as you may be aware, in our parliament, parliamentarians are constituted into portfolio committees. We are responsible for processing or initiating legislation that relates to higher education and training in our country. Also responsible for executive oversight on the executive for this portfolio. Now, I with my colleagues, the portfolio committee has got about 12 members of parliament, and those who have got other tasks. Three colleagues that will introduce themselves. After that, I'm going to give an opportunity to the leader of the delegation to brief us about the context of your visit, and then we'll have an interaction which will be very simple and informal. We do understand that we are meeting very energetic students who would like to know about our country, and that you come from such a wonderful country that has got about 99.5% literacy level. I think it's quite a great achievement. The whole country, we are struggling with obliterating illiteracy, and we think a lot from you as to how we could obtain almost 100% literacy. Challenges and create opportunity for success. Can I allow my colleagues to introduce themselves?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, everyone. I'm Marunge Mpina. I'm the head of school. Thank you. Welcome.
Thanks. My name is Sayan Makube, a member of the Portfolio Committee as well. Thanks. You're welcome.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Larry Bosman, also a member of this committee. It's just maybe due to that I'm coming from the northern part of the country, from Malala. And we obviously, I'm the only member of the opposition here today. So I represent us. Thank you.
Also got officials, officials from the department, they are also just asked them to introduce
themselves. Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Mvuyisi Magcigama, Chief Director in the National Skills Fund, Higher Education and Training.
Good morning, colleagues, honorable members. My name is Vali Jeffy. I'm the Chief Director for International Relations in the Department of Higher Education and Training. Welcome to our colleagues from Azerbaijan.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for hosting us, honorable people, honorable members of Parliament. Let me just briefly explain to you the reason why we're here. My name is Anar Valiyev. I'm a Dean of School of Public International Affairs at Azerbaijan Diplomatic Academy. Our academy was established 6 years ago as an institution for training of diplomats and civil servants in our country. Later on, we turned to become some kind of full-fledged university. And currently, we are called Azerbaijan Diplomatic Academy, but we're offering many degrees from business administration to public policy and international affairs. We're still considered as a school of Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and that's why the members of the group also include the Azerbaijan diplomats who are working for Ministry of Foreign Affairs. The purpose of our visit to this part of the world is both educational and business related. During the last semester of the class, our students are supposed to take a course called Capstone. And a Capstone course this year, Envision, is actually entitled Go to Africa. We are trying to, with this capstone project, to initiate an interest of Azerbaijani public, business, and government in African affairs. So our purpose over here to prepare a full-fledged report on business and investment opportunities in South Africa, Namibia, Botswana, and Angola. We divided our class into the four teams, and one team went to Angola, another team to Namibia, third team in Botswana right now, and a fourth team we are here in South Africa. So technically we are fact-finding mission for preparing report. Of course, mostly 60 or 70% of all our meetings are dedicated to the business-related things. We met with President Rouse, Coopers, we met with various companies, and all other places. Also the people meet with usually with the companies. But meanwhile, we also meeting with the people who are decision makers, the people from universities who can give us kind of the inside information or kind of full information. So for example, after this meeting, we'll plan to go to Stellenbosch University to get their perspective on African politics. So this report will include both recommendation about businesses, healthcare, education, and everything. So that's our reason to come over here to the parliament to hear kind of alternative information, what we hear from businesses, whether they have problems, what kind of the issues exist. Meanwhile, the second purpose of our visit over here, since we are a diplomatic academy and we are an education institution, we try to build a partnership with various universities in South Africa. So far we met with the University of Johannesburg, we went to the University of Cape Town, we met with several think tanks in Johannesburg, and we are going to Stellenbosch University. Another purpose of our visit here is to establish partnerships, exchange programs. Meanwhile, our diplomatic academy is offering full scholarship for students from Africa to come and study with us for 2 years master degree or 4 years of bachelor degree. When we leave, we'll just give you enough information, so we'll really highly appreciate if you be so kind to send us your student. For this year, the cycle is over, but for the next year, the cycle starts in October, so your students, if they come, they will be studying in September 2014, either bachelor degree or master degree. And we're offering 4 degrees. It's a public policy, international studies, and economics. And our plans also to launch one day degree, and by the way, communication also, IT technology. And our plans to include also to start engineering school, medicine, and a lot of things. So we would highly appreciate if you can just send your students or encourage your students to come. So far we don't have any students from South Africa, but we'll be really interested to have this perspective. Meanwhile, we also was asked at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs to find out, again, what are the, over here, needs of education in South Africa or healthcare systems over here, because we have an agency called Azerbaijan International Development Agency, and goes all over the world and constructing the houses, constructing the mostly schools or hospitals. So our recommendation would be also sent to this agency called AIDA for their action in this part of the world, Botswana, Angola, South Africa, and Namibia. And here the students, you can see, again, they are on the project. They will be asking you various questions, and we hope it will be kind of an honest discussion about any kind of the topic that we're, because we're here only for 1 week. So we came here on Sunday, so we still have a, I don't say stereotype, but we have a maybe misperception or different kind of the wrong information about South Africa. So right from beginning, sorry if we ask the question that is, I don't say not appropriate, but maybe it's not right to answer. But still, we really appreciate if you answer our questions on that issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I think we deeply appreciate the interest of your country and to explore strong relations with South Africa and also create opportunities to enable our students to come and study in your country. I think nations of the world have come to realize that we are common citizens of a global village. So we're also part of Azerbaijan ourselves. We'll take great interest to have our students coming to study in our country. We, as you may know, we've got 3 universities that belong to our government. We've got 50 public equity colleges.
in our country we have about 6,000 foreign students who are studying Mayas in Switzerland, and we would really appreciate to have many of our universities having student exchange programs with your country for them to teach you about our culture, to learn about your culture, and create relations that will improve the world, you see. Now, I want to take this opportunity to allow officials of the department just to give a synopsis of our efforts to improve education and how we could actually take forward this discussion, particularly around initiating students from our country being able to study in Azerbaijan. If the parliament can give an opportunity, I'll be prepared to come and study there. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Colleagues, it's obviously a wonderful opportunity for a brief engagement and an reflection, because we are two countries quite far from each other, both geographically, but also culturally to a large extent. But I think having come to the Western Cape as your second leg of your visit to South Africa, I think you're going to find it far more congenial place in similarity to Azerbaijan in terms of the cuisine that is offered in the Western Cape. The fact that a large percentage of the population is also Muslim, which is what Azerbaijan is as the official religion is in Azerbaijan. But you're correct. I think this is the first visit that we are having as a department, and the portfolio committee graciously agreed to host a visit by a group of people from Azerbaijan, and so compliments to the Bureau of Delegation and the group for identifying Africa, because it's a new millennium, it's a new area, it's one of the most exciting continents now to engage with politically, economically, and socially, because so much is happening. But just to say that South Africa has just recently had its own statistics undertaken, and our population size obviously varies tremendously to that of Azerbaijan, so we're in the over 50 million mark now. The chair raised an important point when he said that we are also now the seventh most popular destination for foreign students. So after your traditional countries of hosting foreign students like Australia, America, the UK, South Africa, and the southern tip of Africa in particular, has become now the most famous educational hub for the exchange. So it speaks volumes to the kinds of quality and educational opportunities. That's the challenges that we have. And so my colleague and myself will speak to some of these issues just very briefly to say that I'm sure that in your own readings you've understood the size of the landscape, understood that we have 9 provinces. This is the hub of the country, all the laws get made here. So it's quite a privilege also for me as an official to be sitting on this side of the bench to represent it. But our system is clearly new in many respects. We are a new department established in 2009, and we have, and I'm sure the honourable members will speak to the way the legislature, the parliament interacts with the department and its engagement. Our system is not very dissimilar to yours in terms of what we call the national qualification framework, in terms of the structures of general education, further education in terms of your training, and our levels of higher education form essentially the same kind of framework. But I think what is important for us, and the issues that you've raised, Dean, is that we have 23 public universities, 23 public institutions, and that's really the hallmark of our society. That's really intellectual economic development very really strong. It's the training
ethnic institutions. But a parallel process is also how vocational education and training college sector. Now currently there is an inverse taking place, because more students are going towards the university sector than towards the college sector. And I think this might be true also in your society. And so we're trying to change that configuration around. So we have two departments or two ministries of education in South Africa, one responsible for basic education, primary schooling and secondary schooling and so on. And then there's the department that we represent, which is the Department for Higher Education and Training. But an important department that we intersect with very closely is the Department of Science and Technology. And that's an important department also in the landscape of South Africa. So I'm sure you don't want to hear about the structure of the department. You know, we have a minister, deputy minister, then a whole plethora of good civil servants. But we have the system in place. That's administered from the national level in the country. I think it's important to say that in terms of our public universities, there's also a distinction between the universities of technology and the comprehensive universities that we have and the more traditional ones. You obviously belong to some of our elite schools in the country. Some of our schools are ranking in the top 100 globally. But we also have historical challenges, and some of our, what we refer to as domestically the historically disadvantaged institutions have historically been facing only for black students. And these institutions we now taking up and getting on par. And that's our vision for ensuring that the South African high education landscape reflects the kind of policy that we are seeking. The landscape has the colleges, the vocational colleges, that's where you're training, and my colleague will address some of these issues around what we refer to as the further education and training colleges. An important sector, because that's really capturing the good market. There's a large proportion of Africans who are neither in education nor in employment. And so we are grappling with that challenge today. I think it's important to note that the policies are in place. What we now think is around our vision around quality education. And that's the case we all engage with. So it's also around the question of skills development becomes important. And here we have what we refer to as the sector education and training authorities responsible for the formal sector training. But it's also that parallel arrangement of the people are not important and the same in that country. I'm trying to be as general to allow yourselves to, you know, to raise the questions of engagement. As I briefly mentioned to the chair before the meeting, our understanding of advanced young is also very limited, and I think it's a wonderful initiative to demystify ourselves. The only thing that I know about Azerbaijan personally is that we've got some of the great writers called Marseille, and he's a wonderful writer. I'd like to see that all South African, you know, people read this book. But we also have very good writers that we would like to export and introduce into your system. And so maybe as a starting point, we share with you, you know, just a good list of South African writers to develop that interest of heritage and history between our two countries. So I'm going back to 1915 when the writer was writing in Azerbaijan for the different configuration. So, but I'll ask my colleagues to just comment from the skills part too.
Thank you, Dr. Persin, and also welcome to the delegation once. My colleague has made reference to the big numbers of young people that are currently not in any employment or education or training. And our Minister of Higher Education
actually with over 1 million people, and young people between the ages of 15 and 25, 3.8 million of them doing absolutely nothing. It's a major challenge that the Department of Higher Education is facing. We also know that the system in the country, the education system, has also had to have other pressures as a result of the policy that government has adopted, which is to ensure that every child who is of a school-going age must be at school. So then we've seen a participation rate of those young people in education over the past 20 years moving from just under 60% to now over 90%. The higher education or the post-education system, the rate at which it has grown, has not been in a position to absorb the big numbers of young people now coming out of the basic education schooling system. And now you find a situation where there is a growing need in the country to change the scenario that exists, where a number of young people want to go to these 23 universities that we have, as opposed to going to the vocational and vocational education table. This, or sometimes what we refer to as technical vocational education entry, is the major area where we would, as a country, need as much assistance as possible in order to make it more attractive to young people, and also to link it to the developmental objectives that are out there in the country. The country at the present moment has set itself to put up infrastructure in areas where currently there is very little infrastructure or no infrastructure. But the reality is there is this big number of young people with very good skills or sometimes no skills, and also the reality of lack of skills generally in the country in order to invest in construction of these major projects that government gives us. So for government to be in a position to respond effectively to this infrastructure program, we need as many skills as possible. So on that angle, you will then find the reality that the country with limited capacity to train young people, we would need places where fast tracking of training would have to take place. And building of the technical vocational education system in the country may need outside assistance in order to put it at par with what we require by the demands of the economy that we see for the time is. The other challenge that the country is facing generally is special education. The reality that, like it is happening all over the world, the urbanization, the level at which people are becoming urbanized, putting more pressure on few resources that are already in the urbanized areas. In the main country, it has been a very rural one, and the majority of people staying in rural areas, that most of whom didn't really have much in terms of education facilities. With the policy which promotes more people going into education, the increase of numbers of people getting urbanized, the pressures on the facilities that are already there has become unbearable. So all kinds of opportunities with respect to young people obtaining education elsewhere become more and more important for exploration by the country. So overall, my colleague has covered broad outline of how our education system is set up, but I just demanded to make emphasis on the need on the part of the country, the work that the country is beginning to do in ensuring that its vocational education and training system becomes also one of those systems that our young people look forward to going into, so that we can expand the pool of skills that become available to increase the competitiveness and change.
thank you. I'm so ready now to take questions that we have on any aspect that we can hopefully deal with as part of this meeting. You can introduce yourselves as you speak.
Honourable members of Parliament, thank you for the vote, Wickham. My question is basically about the issue that the sir has spoken today on the youth that is basically not in academia and not employed and is unemployed currently. So I feel that there's a bit of misunderstanding here, because as we have got information from the weekly meeting that there's a high immigration into South Africa, but there is also high employment. So basically, now there is an issue that why is there high immigration then? Because there should be an incentive for jobs. So people are still immigrating, knowing that there is a high unemployment in South Africa. So what I'm seeing is, what is your relation as of members of parliament to high immigration? Maybe there should be some quotas, and maybe that the current youth that is unemployed could have used the job level, and is there some kind of misunderstanding between these two parts? Because is that because of the low wages of the immigration labor force, or is there any other issue? Thank you.
Colleagues, we're going to engage on these questions informally. I think, in my view, South Africa is a magnet in Africa. People that seek opportunities. It is the largest African economy, you see. And now every African hopes that if you could go to South Africa, there is the possibility of you, extracting sustainable livelihoods. And as a country also, we are aware that international migration is universal. You see, we do give permits as a country to people with required skills that could help, enhance our economy and ensure that we're able to improve as a country to be at the same level with other developed economies. So I think the driver is for people from other African states to come to Africa is the hope for a better, a greener future. You see, now the aspect of unemployment, you realize that 60% of those that are unemployed are said to be those that have not had access to education. Now it's becoming an imperative for government to expand opportunities for our youth to be able to gain skills that will enable them to partake in the economy. For instance, our government is going to be unrolling a huge infrastructural program. And this program, we need technicians, we need engineers, we need all these sorts of skills, and we lack those skills. That's why there's an approach towards improving our skills base in terms of technical skills, vocational skills. Our 50 FED colleges now are beginning to open up spaces to allow our youth to go there and get the skills. We have CETAs, 21 CETAs, that are responsible for cultivating opportunities in the private sector for our students to go there, gain skills, and then partake in the economy. Yeah, that is the little I can contribute. Members, if you would like to amplify my input.
Yes, I think maybe also from my side, I would like to emphasize the specific issue that was asked, because I think it's very important to understand the realities in South Africa. You have highlighted it, but let me just also add to the problem. As the chair said, more than 60% of our unemployed people in South Africa do not have matric, so they've got low qualifications. We find that only 6% of people who are unemployed in South Africa has tertiary education. So what is lacking in South Africa and for a developing country is skills in specialized skills in certain areas which we lack. So that is actually an area that we really are looking for people from outside. There is an immigration pattern, and we are also headhunting. Just to give you an example, medical students, medical practitioners in South Africa. I myself come from a medical. I'm a medical doctor myself, so I understand the issue. Is in very, very short supply in South Africa. The number of doctors per unit of people in South Africa is so low that we cannot afford to go on with our medical system. It is lacking expertise, it's lacking doctors. So, and we have not got the facilities in South Africa to produce enough doctors per year. So that is only one of the areas that we are lacking. So we are really sitting in a situation where we've got maybe a lot of medium, middle-class educated people with skills, maybe not sufficiently, but that is in supply. But then we've got a huge area which do not have enough supply in the country where we need to import people from outside.
Okay, my name is Tural Safayev. I'm a student of the Pahlavi Academy, and I'm from Azerbaijan. First of all, I want to just mention the honorable gentleman's comment and reference to the literature. And of course, I understand that without knowing the literature of the country, you cannot investigate in depth of be it business or political situations. So actually, we read some books on and South African literature, which is Kotsi, This Place, and Alan Payton's country and Cordomer's July People. And we have the book one government program which funds the translation of the book, the writer books which got Nobel Prize. And as the Cordomer got the Nobel Prize, we already translated into Azerbaijan, and it's going to be published in August in first South African writer in Azerbaijan language. And this was my comment, and I have one question, and this is also somehow related to unemployment. As the committee which deals with education, of course, I'm telling it from the perspective of the student. In one hand we have the education system in South Africa, which is pretty much evolved compared with many countries, and on the other hand, there is a high rate of unemployment. And one of the ways to decrease the rate of the unemployment is to attract investment to the country, which the foreigners will come and invest and create more jobs. What is the role of your country or in general the parliament on trying to incentivize the foreign investments to the country, and what is the future or prospective plans to adopt more softer laws which will actually encourage people to come and invest in Africa? Thank you.
Yes, I think the Department of Economic Development would be best placed to answer this question. But I can indicate that we as a country need solid direct investment companies that be able to establish plants in the country. Employ people and also transfer skills to local communities, in that way contributing to the reduction of unemployment in the country and improving the economic development. And I think there are programs where a company is to have business to take up young people and give them skills. They are given resources in order to support the number of the students that they've taken up for skills development. In that way, it reduces the liability on the part of the employer to be responsible for paying the salary to the student, because the state would have given a stipend for the student, and the student in return would gain the skills, which would also help the profitability of the company. So in that way, our regulations are such that from
hold investors to come in and say, I've got this particular sort of skills that I would like to bring to the country. I'll build this factory if you produce this and that, and then employ people. And in that way, we really are a mixed economic system that needs of strong foreign investment.
Of course, part of the problem of unemployment may be historical and the issues that they referred to, which we're dealing with. And the problem is not at the policy level in terms of enabling companies who can come and invest and all of that. It may not be the problem. Part of the problem, as referred to, will be mismatch of the skills and what the market would require at the current moment. So it may not be that you don't have qualifications at times. You would be having qualifications, but you may find that you may not easily be absorbed by the economy at this point in time. Recently, the global recession played a major role in that some or most companies would change jobs. And it's a crisis that we're also trying to handle. But most of those will be at a lower level. It will be workers who are at a lower level, not those who would require knowledge kind of skills that the economy would need. So you have a particular group of people who would actually be affected by this kind of a challenge. Now, at times you don't dictate in terms of who should invest, who should not. And those who have got the capacity to invest go around shopping. So they look at various countries and look at what is there for them and will always go according to what will be most suitable for themselves. But the appeal will always be there. And where possible, we attract as much investment to our own country as possible. There are countries that we relate to historically who trade with us, whose main companies are doing work in our own country, and those will as well, in terms of their social responsibility, put more resources back into the country to help produce labor and all of that. And the same appeal will go to Azerbaijan if we were to have something that we can work on together. Areas that we think could be of mutual benefit to saying let's encourage some relations in that regard to help deal with the challenge as already obtaining in our own country. It may be to some degree that we've got some challenge as well. We'd like to hear more about that so that we'll look at what does it mean, what could we develop as a mechanism to try and handle this and lighten the changes that we have got.
Yeah, this can be also, Europe is I think our strongest trade partner as a country.
Well, just a short comment. It's really interesting that our country became independent in 1991. Your country became independent, I mean, full independent, I would put it in 1994, or post-apartheid period. And, of course, we don't have a similar problem because we were lucky that when the Soviet Union collapsed, 99.9% of Azerbaijani population was literate, versus South Africa, where the problem of illiteracy is very high. So the problems cannot be compatible in that sense. So in this sense, we were much more luckier than you are. But there's a lot of issues that could be similar to our problem and your problem is it's mismatch between the skills that university give to the students and the market. But despite that 99.9% of literacy rate in Azerbaijan, the biggest problem for Azerbaijan today is that university gives very good education, but it does not reflect what the market needs. Well, simply for example, Azerbaijani University may produce around 200 historians every year. But in fact, the country does not need so many historians. they just graduate, they go to the market, they cannot find work as historian or as teacher of history, and they become either police officers or prosecutors or just to go for the business. So this is the biggest problem that we challenge we have. So I think sooner or later we'll come to that issue that the skills that the country requires is mismatched with what universities produce. And that's what we are doing reforms right now in our education system, is to link the universities with the business sector. To say that, because for example, this capstone project is not only an educational project. We're trying, once we come back, we'll make a presentation, and definitely one or two companies will grab one of the students. Even though they were studying diplomas and international affairs, it doesn't matter. The businesses will take them. Because they have the necessary skills for the work, even in the business sector. So these kinds of things were just trying, I mean, these are reforms that are going on. Also, again, experience of Azerbaijani educational reforms, of course, you cannot say we are pioneer educational reforms, but the certain things could be a kind of share. Let's say your delegation come to Azerbaijan, you just find out, let's say one of the greatest programs for us was study abroad program. So every year we send around 200 or 300 Azerbaijani students to go to study at the master level in United States, in Europe, in Asia, on various specials. So for example, we don't send for humanities. We don't say that for literature, political science, or IR, we say these schools are very good developed in Azerbaijan. But if you go for engineering, medicine, IT technology, logistics, transportation, even business, we don't send, we need enough business schools. So this kind of a skill that is really required, but we cannot give. Maybe 5 or 6 years we'll produce such people, so in this sense, they will not send any more abroad. This kind of certain kind of initiatives at Azerbaijani level could be again shared with Europeans. And again, what I would encourage you, for example, public policy programs. This is kind of the future of the programs actually you need. You don't need so many diplomats, honestly, I would put like this, or, I mean, I don't want to just hurt my, the colleague over here, literature people or history. It's a great thing. But what the country needs most, it's policymakers. And a really good public policymakers or public managers who can manage the problem. And that's why we're watching this problem. And the same problem we exist in Azerbaijan. Because 90% or even 85% of Azerbaijani public officials, they remained from the Soviet era. They don't know how to work in a democratic society. They don't know how to work in a new challenges. And this is the biggest reforms in administration we're taking, which slowly moving them away and just accepting that the young people who know how good the public management is in democratic conditions. So this is where my time. Thank you.
I would like, before I give my official, to agree with you that there has to be an adaptive response by universities to realize that they've got to produce at least problems that respond to contemporary societal challenges. We should be able to whilst appreciating fundamental elements of universities such as academic freedom, scientific research, and institutional autonomy, that we should in fact be able to respond to the strategic social and economic imperatives of our society in order to assert our relevance as universities. I think that is a challenge which we have as a country to be able to respond to. And as a government, we have got a policy that would like to direct youth resources to developing the vocational programs and technical programs to enable our youth to partake in the economy. And I think that will in some way bridge the gap that perpetuates the situation of unemployment and underemployment. We do not want to say that people in our country must not study humanities, because I think that's of course sustained democracy, because we need critical thinkers and so on. We also as a government have got a focus on science, on engineering, on technology and so on. So that we were able to have an active being able to deal with adapt products and mining and so on. Those are challenges. I think that there are similarities to some extent. Yes, my good.
Okay, thank you. I must be schooled. I certainly your intellectual development, because I was going to repeat some of the things that you just said. But I think it's important. And I like the way you compare the two countries in terms of its development from a historical past of repression in a sense and ideology, you know. But what we have also consciously made an attempt as a country was to say that you need values in a society. And values you're not going to get from your engineers, from your financial markets. Look what happened in Spain today. You have 60% unemployment. That's the market that has lived and decided what should happen. So the 20th century's greatest leaders were not your scientists, but were people from the humanities, by the way. You know? And so this country has made a conscious attempt not to denigrate science, but to in fact put science up as an important pillar for development. But at the same time, develop the humanities. Because that's the important thing. Otherwise you lose it. And so we now conducting a study of what we refer to as the labor market analysis study. It's a very unusual study in most countries that we would be very willing to share with you how we're doing this, to exactly understand what the labor market needs are going to be like for the future. So it's not sewing bones and predicting what it's going to be like then, you know, in traditional senses, but in fact using the latest data available to us to understand what the market requires. So I thought I'll just share that in with you.
Thank you. I also want to make a reference to the fact that the country also recognizes the importance of knowing what skills are required and identify the fact that we lack what we said were the critical skills training mechanism. And in that sense, Chavez made reference to what is said were CETA's sector education and training authorities. The main responsibility of which is to prepare what is said were the sector skills plan. These sector education and training authorities are very close to industry. They have engaged with deep health in the industry to understand what are these skills needs at the present moment in that particular industry, what are the economic trends, is this industry going to be there in the next 10 years, 20 years, in that sense, what skills do they require now, what skills are they short of now, such that the manner in which the training development in this sector education and training authorities is directed towards what is identified as key critical skills in the economic sector in which they operate. So we have got the advantage of that particular system. Of course, it has had its own problems, and through the administration at present is being brought closer to the education system because it operated as a client outside the education system. So you could see the development of sector skills plans, but they were not signed back then into the education system to tell us that this is the skills needs of various industries within the sector.
Good morning, honorable members and colleagues. I'm a student of Azov Diplomatic Academy. My name is Vladimir. I'm from Ukraine. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to graduate in less than a month, so it makes me professional unemployed in a couple of weeks. Luckily I have a master's in history, what was mentioned, the humanities studies on. So I have a couple technical questions and I just address them in a row and then we'll see what's going to happen. Talking back to unemployment issues, I was told by a friend that one of the constraints also is the rights of the employees, the very strong rights of the employees. so they, on the market, they are more protected than employers. So my question is, the first one, do you plan as a parliament any further liberalization or try to, you know, not to cut the rights, but change this a bit to make it easier for employer to employ people and make easy to, you know, to make them mobile, to change the crew and so on, because as I was told, maybe it is wrong, the employees are well protected with laws and with unions, and then it makes tough for, let's say, in agriculture, a farmer to hire, let's say, 5 to 7 workers instead of what he's doing, he's just buying a tractor or a truck. So this is my question one. Any changes planned at the parliament? Second one, this is more for country. A very simple question. How do you keep unified system? You got 11 different languages or even more. You got different minorities over here. How do you put, how do you control this system? How do you make it that you deliver the education equally and it's really the same quality to all the regions of the country? Because as far as I know, in Azerbaijan and also in Ukraine, we have different regions. So I would to just ask you your perspective and your ideas, how do you make it unified as a one coin. Third issue, as far as I was told also, let's leave it this way, some both apartheid leftovers when you have this era off and then it's changing into a different direction and leaning into opposite direction. Now, just wanted to know your stance, any ideas, any actions to change that, because I heard from the friend again that we also can wait till all the new generation born, all those post-1994, and then it's going to be easy to reform, then it's going to be easy to change that. But I'm just trying to get know how do you change, how do you maybe proliferate the knowledge, or how do you deliver the message about what happened in order not to make it used as a, you know, as a propaganda or as a tool in the politics. And the last one, any concrete government planning or ideas about developing the packages to create an initiative or creating kind of tenders or investment opportunities for the educational sector as a, I mean infrastructure, for example. Any ideas how do you advertise or attract, for example, for school builders or educational institutions or skill training centers, creation, something like that? Thank you.
You indeed address very, very sharp, technical questions. I'll attempt to respond to one of labor. Market flexibility. I'm a student of law, you see, and at one moment I've been a senior manager for labor relations in government. And I can authoritatively tell you that in South Africa it's easy to dismiss. Easy to dismiss an employee. But there must be a process. For instance, if you would like to dismiss an employee for underperformance, firstly, you must have, you know, a graduated approach. That is, you must first, as a first step, train the employee. And say, these are my expectations of you, and these are the skills I'm going to offer you to be able to achieve this level of performance. And after that, if the employee is unable to measure up to that benchmark, then you can assist. So, the only thing that you cannot do in our country is that if an employee transgresses, as the boss you say, you are fired. So many people who argue that the labor market is very stringent that they would like to hire people just on the spot. See, I've dismissed many people in government very easily because you must give them a notice. So, cause why I was not suspended within 2 weeks. You sit in the office, you write, and I tell you, no, having considered your reasons, I feel I must suspend you in order to undertake this case against you. After that, we set an additional inquiry. You come, you make your own representations. So the element of our legal laws introduced an aspect of justice. You know, we call it fairness. Fairness. So I think as to whether the government will introduce that, it may belong to another portfolio committee. We do have a portfolio committee of labor. They may be best placed to hint as to whether they think there must be a new development. My view is that I think to that extent it is a matter of misconception that we have very stringent laws. I think it's just a matter of us sit down or you one day employ as a consultant to tell you how easy it is to employ and fire. You say it's extremely easy. I know how to do it. And there are many other experts out there that can do the same thing. I think the advent of local country liberated both the oppressor and the oppressed. It was not, an environment where there was a winner and a loser. It was a process in which we sought to create a single natural citizenship in which no one is superior than another. You see, so there was no need to say you are an employee of the apartheid state apparatus must go, and you are a new one. We accept you now. You are in charge. It was a matter of saying we are beginning a new nation. You know, out of a system that separated us on the basis of race, gender, and entrenched inequalities. So our struggle now is to find these inequalities, to transform our society to a level of acceptable equitability. Members may attempt to understand what Dr. Basu.
Yeah, thank you, sir. I agree with you. I think our labor laws are quite well delivered and implemented. But obviously, we've got different views on these issues. And as we, from the opposition, are really worried about the unemployment situation and the effects of the transformation that happened. And you referred to how it's been transformed from the old to the new system, which obviously has a huge challenge. There's lots of issues that comes to the fore that you did not plan for in the beginning, and that you find that is maybe impacting on the reality. One of those things, and you touched on it, is that the perception that the workers have stronger rights than the employees. The chair has highlighted the real circumstances around our legislation, but there's another perception, and the other thing that has happened in South Africa is the labor unions and the people on the ground have different perceptions or understanding of the use of a labor union, maybe in the first place. If you compare it with the developed world, where labor unions are there to balance the needs of the worker with economic realities. And they understand those issues. Whereas in South Africa, we find that perception is not always there. The labor unions would maybe ask for increases way beyond inflation, 2-3-4 times, like for instance in the
farming sector that asked for a 100% increase and just got it settled. Government has a situation where the labor unions are not representative now, and they've got a determination of government. So they put the wage up to 50%. Why I'm arguing around this point is just to show you that there are different situations that happen. What the outcome of that is, obviously, the farming sector is going to mechanize, and they're going to use less workers, and that has happened. The amount of workers in the farming sector, let me just give you those figures, because it's staggering. In the 90s, when we started the transformation, there were 1.2 million formal workers in the sector. 1.2 million. At the moment, we're sitting with less than 600,000, and we are losing all the time because of unfavorable situations in the labor market and not cost-effective type of work of labors that we are finding in the market. The other thing that you just highlighted on it is that also affects the labor market is the Black Economic Empowerment Act. And that's another thing that moves people in different directions, which we're not. It's not an open situation. The criteria that you have to comply to that impacts on the labor situation. So there are a lot of very difficult issues that we need to understand, need to maybe implement, but not it's not always implemented in a correct way. And now a court case in the Western Cape about Black economic empowerment implications. People understand it differently and they want to implement it in a different way. So there are different situations. And the reason why I'm highlighting this is because the previous question about the net foreign investment in South Africa has declined. People are not really looking at South Africa anymore for foreign investment. You know that we've declined from the first country that people wanted to invest in, starting over in the 90s, now to the 10th place in Africa. People are now looking to other areas in Africa rather than to come to South Africa because of a lot of reasons, a lot of other so-called factors that might influence their investment. And I'm not going to touch on all of it. There are unfortunately, there are negative issues that the people outside the country don't always understand, but we do understand it in South Africa. That's why we are trying from our side to do things differently, maybe as incentives. Like, for instance, we've got a wage subsidy that we are promoting for a number of years. Government has accepted it, but they don't implement it. We've implemented the wage subsidy in Western Cape. We created more than 100,000 jobs through that type of incentives. But, you know, it is a situation that we are all learning. We learn under with as we go along. So I just highlighted a few of these that we're using we do maybe, and the opposition party almost clearly says to you that we differ from approach to the situation from the ruling party. Because, that is why we're the opposition. I mean, we must have different views on some of these issues as well. Thank you, Chair.
The doctor should have declared as well. It's a farmer.
Farmer?
Yes, but it's fine. It's fine. You see, I won't attempt to share, to sit here and want to talk on behalf of labor organizations, you know. But we understand the situation basically, and I think there will always be engagement between labor and the employer organizations at that level. Ours in the main was to ensure that the policies governing that environment are sound. But what should be noted as a major issue is that we are emerging, or we're just emerged from a highly exploitative and unjust system. So whatever you do is to try and balance that. So it's not an easy thing, really, to just say, no, relax, these laws and so on. We are emerging from a particular background. And so far, I believe it is still a framework that we can live with. The Constitution of South Africa is hated the world over. And it includes the human rights kind of system in there and so on and so on. No Buddhist necessarily talking ill or bad against that. And those who want to hold on to the past, they will be the first to cry like small babies when certain things are done. So it's not an easy thing. But then on the issue about unity in diversity, we're moving from the premise that says race or religion and all of that are not necessarily divisive in their nature, but you can cause them to be. And anyway, discrimination will always take this or the other form and so on and so on. But we are saying, in terms of acknowledging our own country as is, we are here in our various kind of cultural, religious, racial, and all that, you know. But we are saying we can work and grow as a nation together. And where commitment to do same exists, we have seen one. So it will be pockets here and there of people who want to say that perhaps the past was better. But those who grasp or absorbed in the future and not looking back are living nicely in the new South Africa. If you were to look at what was happening right at the advent of democracy around 1994, some people who feared for the unknown or feared of the unknown went outside the country. Later on, the majority came back. And you can't hear of people saying, I'm going out, it will be here and there. Yes, there could be still issues, and I'm not saying everything is perfect by now, but I'm saying those who accepted the new South Africa as is being envisaged and being constructed are here and are living comfortably. So I may not be sure on which basis you are raising the issue or where you got it. Obviously, there are those who might share with you, who might have shared with you this or that experience. But I take it that people are happy with the development. And I don't think there are challenges in that particular account. Even where you would have certain issues, and I take it that at times this information is shared with people for wrong motives. It's just like when we were about to host the World Cup. There were those people who represented some forces who thought South Africa should not host the World Cup. Not because we were not to have that capacity to do so, but they were just jealous of the fact that it would be hosted by the new South Africa, which they never imagined. And that has come and gone, and everybody hailed us for that success, which they never thought would master. Now, I'm saying that that has come and gone. We continue to host so many major world summits or conferences and so on that are successful in South Africa, in the new South Africa for that matter. So the point I'm raising, Chair, is that you will still have some sections of society who would want to paint the negative picture. Unfortunately, they may not be winning, but they want to paint that picture, either about crime or this or that. We're working hard to address most of those. But I don't think there are people who are targeted for them simply because they're of a particular religious group or particular race and so on. People are living harmoniously together, most of our suburbs and so on and so on. They're schooling together, they're beginning to enjoy life together, something which never happened in the past. But obviously the process to heal a country that is emerging from that kind of experiences and so on. I don't want to take much time, but it was just to say, I think some of us see the future being a good one, you know.
On tenders, there are a lot of tenders. They get advertised in newspapers where they will set up certifications and then companies, registered companies, that with the capacity to deliver terms of the specified requirements of the tender will then be from it. The advice that I can give to is that in South Africa, when before you will be at least you must have a registered company in terms of the Companies Act in the country. And it's very easy to register a company. There are not many stringent requirements. You just need to say you are this person, this is the main object of your company, it must have a name, an object, and directors, and how you want to be functioning. It's very easy. I'm sure we'll find time to go to the details of how to have a company. And you can then be finance. And in our countries, I say, there are huge opportunities that are arising in terms of infrastructure development. A lot of billions have been announced over the medium term, in which a lot of things are going to be done. Bridges, schools. We have got several mass schools in South Africa. They must be eliminated. We should build more universities. For instance, we should build two universities now, three universities actually, a medical university and a university in two other provinces, that is the Tangier province and the Bulawayo province. And also in colleges. So there is an abundance of opportunities. That's the little I can say in that regard.
Yes, thanks. Thank you very much, dear Mr. Chairman. I get a call from another person who just organized our meeting with another committee on trade and commerce. And just that's why I want to say again, thank you very much. It was a great pleasure to be here. And if it's up to us, we'll stay here for more, just to get more discussion and everything. But unfortunately, we have to rush to another meeting. Once again, on behalf of our team, on behalf of the Azerbaijan Embassy in South Africa, I want to say thank you very much. We hope to see any of you, most of you in Azerbaijan, to come over here to our beautiful country to visit us, to share your experience. We'll be really happy for that. And again, on behalf of our team, let me just to give you the book about Azerbaijan.
So we'll have a chance to see the diverse lifestyle of Africa, from the animals to the complex. It's also something to do. Thank you very much, India. I think you're going to